My Real Estate for Chisholm and Gayman, at home in Port Melbourne, Blackrock, Elwood and Mount Martha.
Welcome back, Sam Gayman.
Oh, Eddie, it's great to be in the studio.
How are you today?
Yeah, I'm fantastic, thank you. Already back into the swing of things and had some super busy opens at a Victorian place in Elsternwick. And first open, we had 40 groups.
Excellent.
And a bird snuck in and flew around the place, and then a wasp came in on somebody's neck. So it was the birds and the bees.
Not good, Torsten. Yeah, not good, Torsten. Good morning to you.
Not great with you 5 minutes before opening, but from what I hear, the team handled it beautifully.
So. Now, we're talking money today, I think.
We are talking money. We've got our favourite friend, our expert, Dan from Aqua Finance.
Good morning, guys.
Morning, Dan.
How are you? Thanks for having me.
Excellent to hear from you, Dan. Look, there's some really important aspects that are changing the landscape of mortgages and first home buyers and investors, smaller property types as well. So, Dan, there was some big news out of ING recently.
Yeah, that's an excellent pickup. And ING have been are an absolute wonderful lender in competition to some of the big four banks that we all know too well. And they've recently changed their lending policy around the minimum size of apartments or properties that they'll lend on. And what they've actually done is they've increased the minimum size that the property needs to be for them to lend. And they've increased that from 50 square metres up to 60 square metres. So if you're looking at purchasing a property and funding it through ING, it has to be at least 60 square metres of living space in terms of size. So that's one shift. That said, though, it is a changing landscape all the time, and there are still multiple options with lending for properties that are under that size.
So, Dan, I guess really there's a lot of purchasers that are buying in the areas that in Bayside, where our four offices are. There are smaller one-bedroom apartments that are around that 40 square metre mark. There are a few of the banks, I think ANZ is still looking after that area. So it's a horses for courses, isn't it?
It absolutely is. And going through all the different banks' requirements around size, they are all totally different. Probably to name the best two in the current environment would be Commonwealth Bank. If you're looking at purchasing a property that's under 40 square metres and you do have a 20% deposit, the Commonwealth Bank have no minimum size, so that can be a really good lender if you are looking at properties under 40 square metres. And the other one that's very, very good, because they take into account the car space, if it's on the title, as well as the balcony, and that lender's NAB. Their minimum size is actually 50 square metres, but they'll really look at something that has a living space of about 35 or 36 square metres, because a car space is traditionally 15 to 14 square metres in size, and that'll push it up to their minimum requirement. So it is definitely a bit of a minefield, but there are certainly options around.
Torsten, 40 square metres is tiny.
Well, it all comes down to the efficiency of the footprint. So for a one-bedroom, I guess it's similar to...
It'd be more of a bed-sit, though, wouldn't it?
It's similar to a larger motel room, basically, is what it is. But it still gives you a separate bathroom, a separate bedroom in the main. The studio apartments tend to sit around that 35 square metres.
Wow, so that'd be a combined kitchen living area.
Yeah, you'll have an open plan kitchen living area, and that works really well. You'll have a terrific developer that created some amazing spaces in town that averaged around that 40 square metres, and in fact, they've won awards for that building. But certainly what you're finding is the government are trying to push for minimum standards,
yep,
and pushing for that sizing requirement to be a minimum of 50 square metres moving forward. So that hasn't come into policy, but it's certainly an area that they're pushing.
Okay, so with the 40 square metre properties, what are they worth ballpark? Bayside,
yeah, absolutely. So, well, really, they start at about $300,000,
yep.
But most cases they're still going to be sitting somewhere around that $320,000 to $350,000.
Mm-hmm.
And it does give people an opportunity to live, you know, in a suburb that is desirable for them, where they're close to the beach, where they wouldn't otherwise be able to necessarily afford to be in that location.
Sure. This is My Real Estate. We'll be back in a tick.
My Real Estate for Chisholm and Gayman, at home in Port Melbourne, Blackrock, Elwood and Mount Martha.
This is My Real Estate, all thanks to Chisholm and Gaiman. We know Bayside. 9531 1245, the one central number to call. 9531 1245 for all your real estate needs, whether they be residential or commercial, property management or sales. Chisholm and Gaiman, Bayside. Now, if you're calling from interstate, just pop an 03 in front of that number. 03 9531 1245. We're talking about the tiny property today, Torsten.
We are indeed. And Sam, I think you had a question?
Yes, my question, Dan, was just to see whether or not there was any particular reason why ING had made that decision to limit the size to 60 square metres. We find in Bayside particularly, there's a number of people that are renting one-bedroom apartments and buying for investment one-bedroom apartments that are 40 square metres, and they are...
So it's not for the space, it's for the lifestyle.
It is for the lifestyle. I mean, yeah. it gets them into an area. If you look at Elwood, for example, if we're saying that a one-bedroom apartment at that size is worth $320 to $350, the median house price in Elwood is over $1.6 million. Wow. So it's putting them into an area where... You know, they are mixed in with a grouping of very, very expensive properties where they can walk to the beach, walk to shops, have a lifestyle that's desirable and certainly great for younger people that can rent these properties and investors are buying them. So we find it a little bit odd that the banks don't take into consideration location.
Yeah, look, Sam, with your question there, with ING, yes, it is a negative move based on the smaller apartment space, but I think probably they're just looking from a risk profile with their total lending portfolio, and probably just saying, okay, we've got enough eggs in this small apartment basket, and for the next window of time, it could be 6 months, 12 months, not sure, they're probably just saying, we've got enough eggs in that basket, let's look at changing.
Is that what's causing the push, the oversupply?
Oh, look, it might be.
Yeah, I think, Dan, you tend to find that ING have been very aggressive in getting market share, and it might just be rebalancing the books as far as they may have too many of one lot.
Sure.
So what you tend to find is they overcompensate to make sure that the change is quick.
Yep.
And you'll find that at some point in time, my feeling is the ratios will be at a point that they're happy with, and then they'll come back to the marketplace.
Mm.
But there are, as Dan said earlier on, there are plenty of options there with the big four that are making sure that they are covering that space, because as Sam said, location is a key factor, and it's also a factor in rental returns. So small is not necessarily a bad thing in relation to yield.
Yep.
And also your investment costs. But the other thing which is really interesting, Dan,
so the banks should be looking at that.
What one would think so, but as I say, it's all about the actual book balance, and so they've got to look at the economics of it, and also this responsible banking has got them looking more seriously at themselves, that the government are really pushing. But the other aspect...
Well, hang on. If you're looking at responsible banking, then if you're only loaning less, there would be less of a chance of defaulting on a loan that is less than is larger.
Eddie, you couldn't have come up with a better segue to the question I was going to ask Dan is that it all comes down to serviceability, not the loan size. So it actually becomes against your capacity to pay back the mortgage on a monthly basis. Now, those structural changes are happening across the board with the banks, and the timelines are changing significantly in some areas, aren't they, Dan?
That is absolutely spot on, and that's probably the biggest challenge we're seeing at the moment. It used to be always around the best rate for the customers and the best deal, and whilst that's still super important, it is around serviceability, exactly what you mentioned. And just to give you a snippet of some of the changes that are making it a little bit more difficult, is that when a potential client was looking to purchase an investment property, we could often just obtain a rental appraisal letter from the real estate agent determining what sort of ballpark rental yield that property would achieve. Whilst we still do that, the banks are now taking into account or asking the valuers that go out and value the property to put what they believe is a reasonable market rent on the property, and that's often the figure that the bank's going to use. So even though it might achieve a slightly higher rental yield out there on the marketplace, they're often using the conservative measure that the valuer puts on their report. So that's one of the biggest changes, and that does have a big impact on serviceability. The other one that I should mention is that even if the property's earning you $1,000 a month in rent, the bank's only factoring in for their calculations 80% and sometimes 70% of that amount. So if you're receiving $1,000 a month, in their calculations on your borrowing capacity, they're only using $700 or $800. So they're actually taking a really conservative approach to the amount of rent that they're using to help service debts.
This is My Real Estate, and we'll be back shortly.
My Real Estate for Chisholm and Gayman, at home in Port Melbourne, Blackrock, Elwood and Mount Martha.
My Real Estate continues. Torsten.
So, Dan, I guess the other element that's changed is the timelines and the paperwork and the requirements that, I guess, the documentation that you're needing to require to get the actual loans through.
Yeah, that's an excellent point again. And what the banks have actually are changing is probably they're scrutinising applications a little bit more heavily than they used to. It used to be really simple. If you worked on wages as an employee for somebody, just providing a copy of your last two payslips would normally suffice. But the banks are often asking for additional income verification now. And that is probably based around those legislation changes in regards to responsible lending. They're not only requesting payslips, they'll often request group certificates to match up with the payslips. And in some instances now, they're even asking for a copy of the last, say, 3 months' bank account statements from the client showing that their wages or showing their wages being deposited into that account. So there's just a few extra things or a few extra measures that they're taking into account now or asking us to provide to help get the loans approved.
I call them hurdles.
They are, Eddie, they are.
But they're good hurdles.
Oh, look, I think they are. For the industry as a whole, yeah, I really do believe they are a little bit of extra information, but if you've got your broker or your bank onto it in the first instance, they request every piece of information from the start, well, it doesn't hold up the process. So it's just a matter of us making sure we've got all that the bank needs in the original application for a smooth, seamless approval.
Dan, I guess the actual timeline, you were mentioning in our sales meeting during the week that the 30-day loan, there are certain banks that have got the capacity to actually make that happen and others, because of their lead times now, that just aren't an option for buyers.
Yeah, look, there's a couple of lenders, and I suppose they're lenders that we use all the time. Some of your banks, you know, your RNZs and your Commonwealths and those lenders, their turnaround times are fine. Whilst it does fluctuate depending on their volumes, right now is a moment in time. They'll approve a loan, you know, within 24, 48 hours. But the ones that we're finding that are a little bit behind at the moment is ING. Their service level at the moment has blown out to 12 business days. So if a customer's looking to purchase a property with a 30-day settlement, we need to be very mindful.
But surely that's a good thing, because then they're doing their due diligence over that 12 days.
Eddie, that is true. But the problem is, if you've got a 30-day settlement, 12 business days is pretty close to 3 weeks.
Fair enough.
By the time they then approve the loan, and that's if they approve it. And if for some reason they're not happy with it and we have to go to another lender to obtain approval, well, that only leaves us 1 week. So it really presses for time. And the last thing you want to do is miss a settlement.
So, Dan, subject to finance contracts, what's the average time that you'd be advising clients?
Oh, look, if I was doing it and the client was eager to have it turned around as quickly as possible, we can still do them in a week,
yep.
Sam.
Yep.
But
okay.
We just have to be selective on the bank that we choose to go with.
So the rule is longer settlements are better.
Well, not necessarily, Eddie, because sometimes negotiation with a vendor is the vendor wants, they've purchased and they're requiring a shorter settlement. So part of, they might accept a lower price based on a 30-day settlement. So it is.
But it works the other way as well, doesn't it?
But it actually limits some buyers depending on who their bank is. So what it really does is the importance of someone like Dan is becoming more relevant, because it's more technical. So it's horses for courses. There'll be certain banks for certain offers in this current environment. So it's, you know, again, I think 12 days is too long for any organisation. That to me is a resourcing issue, not a due diligence issue. So,
Okay. You
know, that's the, you know, from my point of view, I can't see any reason why they can't adhere to what they've been doing for the last 2 years, and that's been being able to get back to brokers within 5 to 7 days.
No, I agree spot on. It is definitely a resource issue. And just to touch on that, Eddie, about longer settlements, perhaps they're not always ideal. I received a phone call on Sunday where a customer was in the heat of negotiations on a property, and they specifically said, hey, Dan, if our price is going to be accepted if we can achieve a 30-day settlement. Is that okay? With the lender that we had it pre-approved with, no problems, absolutely fine. That short settlement won the property for the client.
Well, I absolutely stand corrected because I always thought the longer the settlement, the better for both parties.
It depends on whether somebody's already purchased something and they've got a clock ticking.
Sure.
And they might have had to purchase something on a short settlement themselves. So there are different factors that influence the negotiations.
And if I could just finish the show by saying, Eddie, when I was young, a young man living in Sydney for 12 months, some of the best memories I had were in a studio apartment overlooking Sydney Harbour.
There you go.
So have a great weekend.
Dan, thank you. Give yourself a plug.
Yes, thank you. Phone 1-800-AQUA-FS or website aquafs.com.au. Thanks so much.
So that's 1-800-AQUA, A-Q-U-A-F-S for Aqua Financial Services, correct?
Correct. Thanks, Eddie.
Thanks, Dan. Thank you, Sam.
Thank you, Eddie.
Thank you, Sam, and thank you, Torsten.
Thanks, Eddie.
This has been My Real Estate. Back next week.
Wherever you go, say hello.
1116 SEN, Melbourne's home of footy.